Singularity.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Singularity 101. Singularity 101 is a regular podcast feature of Singularity weblog, where you can go and listen to it or download it in full. My name is Nicola, aka Socrates, and as always, I will be the man with the questions. Today, for the second time in a row, my guest on the show would be Natasha Vitamore. Natasha Vitamore is so many things that it is very hard to describe her in a couple of sentences, but she is an artist, she is a PhD researcher, she is a designer, and I have invited her today in her capacity of what the New York Times calls the first female philosopher of transhumanism, because the topic of our conversation today would be transhumanism one-on-one. So hopefully we would go through some of the basics of transhumanism, some of the misconceptions about it, some of the ethics connected to the major issues related to transhumanism, and finally we were going to talk about some of the most recent developments. So without further ado, welcome Natasha. It's very nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I certainly appreciate your interest in this topic. It's a timely topic since so much has gone on the past decade within the realms of transhumanism, so it's good to revisit it. It's good to knuckle down and get some of the original ideas and historical links.
And I think that's the reason why it is a very timely topic, and I believe it's going to be more and more timely as time goes by, and it would come and be more and more into the popular mainstream media. But unfortunately, right now, I think that the way I see it, it's very mainstream has a very sort of dystopic, Frankensteinian, apocalyptic kind of perception of transhumanism. You know, there's always something going wrong, there's always a Frankensteinian effect, there's always ugliness, there's always death, and it always ends up bad, pretty much, most of the time. So let's start in the very beginning here, and perhaps we should start with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is, of course, also the first work of science fiction ever, written by another woman. I think she was 19 years old at the time, actually. So let's start with that. Is Frankenstein the first sort of proto-transhumanist work of science fiction or of any writing, in your view?
I think it's the first in the Western world that actually caused a stir, ignited some fury, some curiosity, certainly took a look at mechanizing the human body in a fairly serious and strong narrative of both interest and excitement of what could possibly occur, as well as fear and rejection of the downside of it. And it certainly set into place part of the dystopic view of altering human physiology through technology. So I think that it is quite profound in that way, and it's a good read, too. But I think if we look back further, we'll see Golem, the story of Golem. We'll see edifices designed to worship throughout rituals and religions. And I think that if we go back over time, we'll see links to more anthropological research and archaeology about the different bodily forms that were together as a sub-personality, or whether, even if it was more mystical or religious-based, there was always this drive of a human to look outside his or her body and wonder what it would be like to alter that. But as far as transhumanism is concerned, I think Frankenstein is probably very relevant.
Yes, and so in that sense, do you think that, I mean, pretty much Mary Shelley set the tone of this apocalyptic sort of pessimistic, in a way, even if you will, view of the future. And most science fiction following her has been having this kind of a slant, if you will. So do you think that she did more damage than good in a way?
Possibly. I think, you know, many of our favorite science fiction writers who are indeed transhumanists in scope, and many are self-proclaimed transhumanists, have written some very scary narratives that have frightened the general public, those who've read it. But many of them have been made into movies, especially Philip K. Dick. He wasn't a self-professed transhumanist, but he certainly was looking at a lot of the issues that mm-hmm. has been discussed for decades within the realm of human-machine interaction, human-computer interaction, human enhancement, biotechnology, etc. So I think that that whole spectrum has done a little bit of damage, yes. Mm-hmm. However, the other side of the coin is it's done a tremendous amount of good, because some really well-written science fiction stories have enormous mathematical credence and elements of physics and astronomy and cosmology to such a degree that those writers are highly schooled. I mean, they know what they're talking about. So the stories may have a frightening human narrative, but if we look at it from a different perspective of maybe space exploration or accelerating technology, there mm-hmm. is a bit of truth to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good in that way. But I think we, more than anything, we need balance. We need some good romantic stories, some comedy, some insightful narratives that show how the human can overcome odds and not be blown up.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, do you think that ever since Mary Shelley, in a way, and especially today, transhumanism has had this kind of a negative connotation associated with it that we sort of have to always confront?
In a lot of ways, but it depends on the circle of individuals or media publication that you're referring to. For example, in academics, transhumanism is a threat to postmodernism, so it's a bit feared, and it's a distant cousin of modernism mm-hmm. and scientism, or said to be. That's not entirely true, but it is packaged in that way, so it's brought some concern. I think that we have an opportunity now to break through the postmodernist wall and show how transhumanism has a great potential to offer solutions to many of the problems we face today. Rather than complaining about the future, let's get in there and do something about it. So I think transhumanism offers that perspective. I think that in the circle of bioethics, if you read the material of Francis Fukuyama or Leon Cass or even Gibbon or outside biotechnology, Bill Joy, the big article in Wired some years ago, you'll see an incredible disdain for altering the body, or even genetic engineering, stem cell cloning, whole body prosthetics, the different areas that have really helped so many people.
Mm-hmm. If I remember off the top of my head, Bill Joy was the person who said, "Why the future doesn't need us." And then Francis Fukuyama pretty much called transhumanism the most dangerous idea.
Yes, that's true. That's true on both counts. Let's start with the last one because I have an interesting little tale.
Yeah.
I was invited to give a talk at the World Trade Center about mm-hmm. 5 years ago on sustainability. It was a big sustainable conference. And most everyone there was, of course, talking about environmental sustainability. And Bruce Mao was the keynote. And as you know, he did the major exhibition on change, massive change, which is so phenomenal. If you haven't seen it, it's a must to go take a look at. Perhaps you can give your viewers a link. Anyway, so I was giving a talk on sustainable humans and the sustainable body. Mm-hmm. And the auditorium was full. And many people were annoyed and many people were overjoyed that we would consider sustaining our own viability, our own lifespan, our own essence, our own brains. And that could be something that, why not? Why didn't we think about this before? The old saying, we back up our computers. Why aren't we backing up ourselves? Our memory, that is. And in all aspects of our physiology. So I think it's very interesting when you think of the comment that transhumanism is the world's most dangerous idea. I spoke to Bruce Mao about that phrase, and he said, good, let them say that. It'll bring more attention to it. And so there we talk about the dystopic attitude does have some aspects of positive return. There's some positive intellectual and emotional capital there, because it at least puts a pointer on it. And if we can just defend the ideas with a certain, you know, rigor and calm rather than defensiveness, I think that it's a good thing. So, yes, transhumanism as the world's most dangerous idea is a silly notion. Of course, there's more dangerous things. I think it's the world's most wonderful idea as far as a worldview. I mean, mm-hmm. it actually offers some hope, and it's not based on, you know, fighting and wars and discrediting others. And Bill Joy's summation about us returning to the past, the native village, and relinquishing the future, and it's a blessed thought. It certainly has a certain charm to it. Let's stop. We have enough. Let's go back. But in all reality, it's impossible.
It kind of reminds me to Voltaire's noble savage concept, in a way.
I live on Voltaire Street, or Voltaire Avenue.
Oh, very interesting.
I think we bought this house because it was on Voltaire Avenue. But anyway, these are very good points, and I think laughing about them and having fun with them is a good thing, because it shows that we're not affected by them in an adverse way, and we're not mm-hmm. frightened by the criticisms, that it gives us an opportunity to respond in ways that not only educate, but question our own motivations. Critical thinking is one of the tenets of transhumanism. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one that we need to keep close to our breast.
And I think our society and our civilization, especially North America, can definitely benefit if we embrace a lot more critical thinking. I think it's desperately needed. But let's roll back the tape a little bit and just start with a very simple concept of transhumanism. What is transhumanism in your view?
In my view, transhumanism is a worldview. In my view, transhumanism is a worldview. You can cut that out, but it's just kind of poetic and cute. Transhumanism means, in its most fundamental way and as crisply as I can say it, it's just elevating the human condition. And by elevating, I mean not saying there's anything seriously wrong with being human. Of course not. We are human, and we are alive, and thank goodness we are. Every day, let's remember to thank ourselves for being healthy and to be thankful, appreciative of all that we have. However, there's too many problems that go on and have continued for far too long. Transhuman is an evolution from being exclusively human in our biology and therefore in our consciousness, to becoming trans-biological, to merging with technology, i.e. machines, and improving the physiological performance of our bodies, meaning that our bodies are continually mutating in ways that are cause disease. And I think that's pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. So transhumanism, by its most concise way, is that we want to be more than just human in our biology. Mm-hmm. So it's very simple, actually. It means, you know, and then the question here is, well, what's wrong with being human, and you're turning into a cyborg, and this is a horrible thing, we should respect our biology. Well, of course we respect our biology. Of course I respect my biology. But the point is that our biology is dying off. Every day after puberty, we start degenerating, and we're trying to slow that down. And I think anyone in the medical profession is doing his or her best to slow that down. So why is it an awful thing to take that seriously mm-hmm. outside medicine? So you wonder if some of the criticisms about transhumanism are the gumption that any human outside the medical field would dare to intervene with his or her biology.
Mm-hmm. I'll come back to that point in a second, but before that, I just want to differentiate transhumanism from, or being transhuman from being cyborg. What are the differences?
This is a really good point. I covered it. Yeah. By the way, I am Dr. Vita Moore.
Oh, congratulations!
Thank you. Thank you. It was a great ride. Loved it every moment, every tedious and delightful moment of it. It was great. So, a cyborg, according to Manfred Klein, is an augmented body for the purpose of existing in non-planetary environments. He came up with the idea of the cyborg in relationship to space exploration. So we can exist out in space in our human bodies over a longer period of time because anti-gravity and some of the elements of the sun mm-hmm. rays will damage our bodies. So he came up with the idea that we need to have an augmented or enhanced body in order for space exploration. Alternatively, Donna Haraway took the term and turned it into a feminist manifesto. Mm-hmm. And that's a totally different concept. In my work, I refer to Manfred Klein because it deals with the body and augmentation for dealing with the environment. Because our environment has changed over the eons, we do have to alter our physiology for our health and maintenance. One obvious example is sun exposure. Because of some of the environmental situations that have occurred over the past hundreds of years, there's a higher rate of skin cancer, melanoma, or basal cell carcinoma. And so we have to protect our skin. And so we put on sun protection on a daily basis and going out in the sun. Well, that's one way we're enhancing our body. We're enhancing our skin and protecting it. Mm-hmm. So I think that the cyborg directly relates to the transhumanism and the transhuman, and I consider it a cousin. But it's a different concept. The cyborg is not self-directing evolution, and it's not self-directed enhancement. And there's no mention in cyborg theory about psychology, about philosophy, about living longer in the future, whereas the transhuman, by its very definition, it's about human transition in altering our biology for living longer and improving or elevating the human performance, both in our physiology and in our cognition.
Mm-hmm. Natasha, I know that you have written extensively for a while on the topic of transhumanism. So, for example, just one example that comes to my mind is the transhumanist art statement that you published in 1983. But for those of our viewers who are new to the topic of transhumanism, what would be some of the most foundational texts or works that they need to sort of lay down the basics, the foundation of transhumanism as a philosophy?
I think the most important texts to read are not the most recent books written, but it's going back to some of the consequential texts. Max Moore, in his writing of the philosophy of transhumanism, I think is very important to read and to understand that transhumanism is a worldview, and the philosophy of extropy is a type of transhumanism. So the philosophy of extropy is a codified philosophy. It's a transhumanist philosophy. But Max also wrote the philosophy of transhumanism, so he wrote both. Transhumanism, large worldview, large philosophical scope, extropy as a specific philosophy of transhumanism. So I think anything that Max Moore has written is very important, and all you need to do is Google it. It's all over the internet, or go to his website. I think that reading Eric Drexler is, I would say, second of importance here, if we're going to put it in a hierarchy, because Eric wrote about nanotechnology, but he didn't just write about it as a technologist. He wrote about it in more of a philosophical narrative that
like
is...
a visionary.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. So important. The visionary ideas encapsulate the whole emotion of transhumanism to want to create a world that is safer, more abundance, more logical use of technology like molecular manufacturing and molecular nanotechnology to mm-hmm. resolve some of the issues that we're facing. So in that regard, it's a highly substantial book. It's a seminal book and a good read. Another one is Robert Ettinger. I think that his book on immortality is very good. Even though I don't use the term immortality and I don't agree with the concept of immortality, I think it's a good book. I think that anything that Damien Broderick wrote, like The Spike, is an early singularity book, and it's very seldom mentioned, but it's a good book, and I think Damien Broderick should be credited with having been one of the early writers on the singularity. And, of course, Werner Vinge, mm-hmm. Who came up with the concept of the technological singularity.
Yes.
I think any book by Roy Walford on nutrition, not CR, but nutrition is good. I think that... my book, Create, Recreate, which was self-published in the 1980s, it's and then revisited in the 1990s, it's all about film, not too much music, but it's about film, narratives, design, storytelling, from the artist design perspective, about these stories about culture. It's so, in a nutshell, it's about culture dealing through the arts and media design and how we're looking at ideas. Another book, speaking of that, and I used one of his stories in it, is Carl Sagan. Mm-hmm. Science is a Candle in the Dark, The Demon-Haunted World. Brilliant book. It's about critical thinking. Mm-hmm. But Carl Sagan wrote it in a way that it's this lovely narrative again. Arthur C. Clarke, his writing is great. Marvin Minsky on The Mind.
Mind Children.
Yes, Mind Children. It's a little bit more difficult, but it's a great book. I think Stuart Brand with The Long Now is a good book. I'm looking over at my bookshelf. I've got three bookshelves against my wall. I wish we were facing that way. I don't have a shoe fetish. I have a book fetish. Robots by Daniel Ishkova in France is a great book. Oh, Beyond Modern Sculpture by Jack Burnham is excellent. Andy Maya is a good read as far as enhancement and early ideas about enhancement, although I'm not in his book. We were trains in the night, and I was not included in it, but that's okay. I think Andy Clarke is a really good writer on cyborg and natural-born cyborg minds, technology, and the future of human intelligence. I think it's a really crisp book to read. Now, here we have to get into the other side of the coin, Francis Fukuyama, who we just spoke of, our post-human future. It's a good read to see the other side of the issues and to see a little bit of the ridiculousness in assumption-making about biotechnology and our dignity being located in our genes rather than in the human drive to solve problems. I think that's maybe a better way to look at human dignity. Of course, Ray Kurzweil, The Singularity is Near. Oh, here's a book that is great, Nanomedicine by Robert Friedis. Mm-hmm. It's all about nanotechnology as nanomedicine, meaning little small robots going into the body and clearing up, cleaning up cell damage from disease and erosion. So that's a really good book, a difficult one, but the beginning of it is delightful to read. Kevin Kelly. Love Kevin Kelly. I think anything Kevin Kelly has written, again, it's not specifically transhumanist, but it's the whole world that we live in. And he gave a keynote at one of our conferences, one of our Extropy Institute conferences. So there's a number of books to read. I have a book coming out. I'm co-editor on it, and it has, I think this may be one of the best books to read. Not to toot my own horn, but as with critical thinking, I think it is. It's called The Transhumanist Reader. Mm-hmm. And it has 40 authors in it, I think 40 or maybe 42, whose early seminal essays cover the topics of transhumanism. So we have this rich book, which will be an amazing resource for readers, not only for students who are studying philosophy, technology, science, and culture, mm-hmm. but also in the public domain, anyone who wants to revisit the original ideas.
Well, I'll definitely, for example, personally want to get a copy of The Transhumanist Reader. Is it out already, or is it coming out soon?
We had a little delay. I was finishing my dissertation and then a big move to Scottsdale. But it'll be out hopefully in the spring. So that's just a few months away after the winter. And I will send you a copy as a gift. My pleasure.
Oh, thank you. That would be fantastic. All right. Perhaps now is the time to tell us a little bit about your dissertation. What was the topic and so on? How did that impact on your work with the book and so on?
Well, I think what I wanted to do was to write on transhumanism, and that was inappropriate as far as my advisors were concerned, because if you are deeply involved in working with the beginnings of a concept, an idea, and then you write your dissertation on it, it can come off as looking autobiographical and lacking scholarship and the rigor that's needed, the objectivity. Mm-hmm. I think I could have done that. Because I have written about deconstructing transhumanism. I'm looking at all the problems within it. Mm-hmm. But I decided to write on human enhancement and take a look at the issue of the transhuman, posthuman. Mm-hmm. So my book is called my dissertation is called Life Expansion. So I'm not just looking at life extension, which is one of the basics of transhumanism, but I'm looking at life expansion, which has become one of the basics of transhumanism. And I think this fits into your interview of me, because we change over time, of course, and as technology keeps on advancing, our ideas need to do likewise. So many years ago, when we discussed life extension, which is not a new concept, obviously, if we go back to Fedorov and Finot and the enormous work, the body of work that was done in life extension, even going back to the Taoists, mm-hmm. with alchemy, there's always been this urge for living longer. Mm-hmm. But in my dissertation, I look at life expansion, and specifically that term, because it's not just extending biological life, it's expanding consciousness, mm-hmm. our identity, personal identity, onto non-biological systems or substrates or platforms, such as in an upload or a whole brain emulation or a substrate-independent mind, as determined by Randall Cohn. So these are the ideas that have gotten more currency. And one element here in our Transhumanism 101 is that the idea is to stay up on knowledge, mm-hmm. to be critical about where we're obtaining our knowledge and to be able to have the skills to decipher what is viable and what needs to be worked on or revisited. So I spent a lot of time arguing that in my dissertation.
Not only that we have to extend our duration, but we actually want to expand our capabilities. It's not merely extending one of the factors, that is to say time, but extending everything, expanding
yes.
everything.
Yes, and who would have guessed the internet? Who would have guessed we'd be having 5 avatars in Second Life? I mean, this is all new. This was not known 20 years ago. Maybe it was written about in some science fiction, mm-hmm. certainly, or maybe people amused about it, but we actually are doing that. You and I are communicating virtually, and we're looking at images of ourselves. So what is not to say that we might have several different personas existing in different substrates, different platforms, and different realities like real time and virtual.
Absolutely.
So I that's why I use the term life expansion.
I really like that
term. Issues of life and death, which is a whole area that I would love to talk to you about at length. But for this segment, we want to touch on what the transhumanism mm-hmm. is. And I think that the importance of our discussing this right now is that there's little room for dogma, because we have to constantly be re-educating ourselves. And that's nothing new. Greatest thinkers in the world have always said you learn from your mistakes.
Mm-hmm. And actually, if I remember if I remember Max Moore, when I interviewed him on Singularity 101, his major message was question everything, which is very much in keeping with what you just said. So let me ask you this though: why is there so much fear of transhumanism? Why is it the most dangerous idea? Why are people intuitively or for whatever reason always pushing away from it and always so fearful?
I think there's a number of different reasons. I will send you a copy, and maybe you can put it up on deconstructing mm-hmm. transhumanism. Let's put something positive up and something deconstructing it. In my research, when I went about trying to find why there are these problems and who's doing what, what's where are the ideas coming from that are negative, and why are they so negative? And part of it's our fault. I take responsibility for my own contribution to maybe some of the problems. And that's a good place to start, looking within and then look, you look at yourself, what are you doing? Then you look at your neighbors and your family, and then you look at your culture. And I look at the culture of transhumanism, and I see some problems. Okay. People don't like change. That's the simple answer. basically, people, I mean, we humans, we like to nestle in our houses, in our, create our nests and nestle in. And we like to have our families. We like to know who we love and know who we want to stay away from. We want to have our job. We want our retirement. And we want to go play golf or, like me, ski down the Telluride mountain slope at retirement. That's not going to happen for me. And when people realize that it may not happen for them, that their dreams of their little community or their little home and hearth could be disrupted at any time, they get scared. We've seen too many wars. We've seen too many problems. And we're frightened about these types of change that could bring another major
What about the argument of human nature that, you know, our human nature is such and such, and transhumanism basically negates the very essence of being human. Now, you can have a sort of a religious idea of what it means to be human, but it doesn't necessarily have to be religious. You know, it could be more, you know, philosophical in some sense, but in either case, there's this fear that we're losing what it means to be human.
Right, and it could be even economics, you know? Supply and demand, you know, let's not go over there. There may not be enough supply and demand. Wanting to be safe, wanting to be financially safe, socially safe, certainly environmentally safe. I think science fiction is one of the problems. Rather than the science fiction writers offering solutions to problems, more times than not, there are problems created from technology. So that's catapulted a lot of fear. So we have number one, a basic innate human characteristic of fear of change. The main media that we go to for our narratives is film. Film is still number one. Gaming is coming up to be sure, but film reaches more people and TV as well. And most of the stories are written by people who want a paycheck. And horror, fear sells. So does sex and love, but horror and fear sells. So that's one thing. It's the memetic engineering on the part of the fear syndrome that is catapulted a bit of a negative interpretation of transhumanism. Another thing is the idea of perfection, which is an anomaly and a misinterpretation, misconception. Mm-hmm. There is nothing written, there's no view within the transhumanist scope that any human is looking for perfection. And I'll tell you why. From the transhumanist perspective, mm-hmm. perfection means stasis. You stop.
Absolutely.
There's no growing. Absolutely. There's no improvement. Once you reach perfection, that's it. You might as well say goodnight. Get your warden and, you know, turn
you
out the light.
You can't change anything after that, yes.
Exactly. So it's anything but
it's
transhumanist.
It's death in a way. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Exactly. It's death for creativity and innovation. So transhumanists are not looking for perfection. Many humans are looking for perfection. The term perfection stems from, you know, the Aristotle's view of the golden mean and the perfect beauty and the perfect aesthetics. Mm-hmm. So it's a misconception. But so that's one thing, the desire to be perfect. No, we don't desire to be perfect. Not we. I'm not speaking for other transhumanists. I don't desire to be perfect. My desire to keep on growing and learning and improving and elevating my own condition.
So that's another perfection, thing. It's a desire for improvement, ongoing, constant, in a way, everlasting. It's like the Tao or the Do in Eastern philosophy of the path, the journey that basically never ends.
Yeah, it's the praxis.
Yeah.
The praxis, within that, the work, you know, it's the travel along the way, you know, knowing where you're going or you know, which course can change, but enjoy the ride, enjoy the journey. Another reason why transhumanism has been gotten a bit of a bad rap is because of the issue of biotechnology and ethics. And in the 1970s, that's when the bioethics and ethics really took hold, and it was based on genetic engineering, some discoveries of genetic engineering, and MIT, an article and work done there, and the New York Times published an article, and the public was not aware that this genetic engineering was being done, and everyone freaked out. And then you start seeing the bioethics councils building. And so it was this fear syndrome that anyone tamper with the human genome, with human life. It's the same type of fear with the abortion, which is not a comparison. I certainly am not for abortion by any stretch of the imagination, nor am I opposed to it. Sometimes things have to be done for a reason, and I think that's a personal choice. But mm-hmm. death on any scale is a very tragic thing, mm-hmm. and the death of even a potential life form to me is sad and ought not to happen.
Let me ask you here, perhaps just again to roll back a little bit and clear out. You've mentioned the word post-human, and I just want to make sure it's clarified. What's the difference between transhuman and post-human in your view?
In my view, the difference between transhuman and post-human is that the transhuman is a transition in becoming something other than human. Mm-hmm. And in our physiology, let's say. And the post-human is a state that's beyond human. So the post-human is not biological, mm-hmm. Whereas the transhuman can be biological, can be semi-biological, can be, you know, it's a transition. Little biological, medium biological, getting less biological to becoming post-human. And the post-human can exist at the same time as the transhuman and the human. It all depends on the technology and the methodology for creating that type of life structure. Now, the caveat here is that in order to be post-human or even late-stage transhuman, it would require the skill of mind uploading or copying and transferring the mm-hmm. the functions of the brain, because if our mind is who we are, what we do, and the brain is the process that creates mind, then we have to be able to understand the brain and its neurology and mm-hmm. all those neurons running around and forming synapses and whatnot. That's very important to understand, and it's one of the most interesting areas of research being performed, and it's only going to grow. Again, going back to what we said earliest on, when I gave the talk on that World Trade Center conference on sustainability, why are we not backing up ourselves? So that's a big area that's mm-hmm. being developed. So in becoming post-human, you have to have that. You have to have the backup. And therein, you would put the workings of the brain in a different type of system.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you then, how, as transhumanists, how do we change the public perception from one that's largely negative or full of fear to ones that's full of, you know, enthusiasm and optimism?
Excellent question. Thank you for asking it. I've given that a lot of thought. And what I realized is that it has to start at home, as we said earlier, that I have to do what I can to make my work represent not just my own ego and, you know, ideas as an artist and designer, but to respect the environment, the culture in which I work. And that is perhaps not being a crazy, wild, you know, flippant person, but taking responsibility. And I think the idea of self-responsibility comes in there. So not everyone has to do it. It's just what I need to do. I try to make all my work have some kind of positive outcome. Mm-hmm. I try to be as clear and honest in my work as far as not being Pollyanna. I wear sometimes rose-colored glasses, but I try to constantly question what I'm doing. And I think one of the most important things is to look at the time frame in which the work is being done. For example, what I'm doing is very different than what I did 20 years ago. You know, then I was making films on psychology, on identity, and you know, sculpting my bodies to rocks and performing inside volcanoes and whatnot, because I was a performance artist and filmmaker. So when I got more into design and future studies and all that, I started becoming more theoretical about what I was doing. So my latest work and the way I'm doing it, I think, is by example. I have a new project called H+TV, and it's going to start very soon. It just hit Facebook yesterday. And it's going to be a slow start, but it's going to hit. And it's a series of 6 episodes on the future. And it deals with ideas mm-hmm. that need to be discussed. And the point of this is that what I noticed is many universities, many startups, many organizations are very quick to get their entrepreneurial project, and that's fabulous. We need so much of that. However, there is not enough attention being paid to the history and the links of information and knowledge or the philosophical, cultural, theoretical aspects of it. Mm-hmm. So you have people just learning the technology or doing their, you know, next big splash without having any referential information or to carry on an intelligent conversation about these things. And outside their specific area, I should say, in all respect. So the six-part series, H+ TV, is I'm looking at six specific areas of transhumanism, and I discuss some of the issues there that I notice. And then after that, there is a online discussion between 3 and 5 discussants who are experts in the area to take a look at some of the issues that have not been discussed. It'll end up as a book, of course, and I think it's quite wonderful. I'm very excited about it, and I enjoy doing it. I got a small grant from Terrasome Foundation for it, and it's going through Humanity Plus and ES Design, my company, and TeleAccelerate is the location where it's going to be online. So that's great.
Very interesting.
Thank you. I think it's one thing that can be done is to just deal with what is. I get a little bit frustrated when I see so much goth and so much negativity and dystopic views, or you know, we already have plenty of that. Let's you know,
focus on the positive message.
Open the windows and have a little sunshine, and yes. You know, we can just be as wild and crazy as ever, and sexual and sensual and exciting. But I think that we need to realize that the time frame we're in means that we have to be a bit responsible, just a bit.
Let me ask you this then, though, but because you mentioned H+ TV. So is it starting with semantics, and how far further does it have to go? Because, you know, people in the transhumanist community are often avoiding the term, for example, immortality, but they talk about radical life extension instead. And the same with even the term transhumanism, as of the last few years, has been perhaps been replaced or attempted to be replaced with the H+ kind of an idea. So how much of that sort of positive change in public perceptions is semantic?
Okay, I'm going to answer this in a different way, if you don't mind.
Sure.
These two examples are not corollary. Mm-hmm. But they're very good examples, and I think that you don't intend them to be corollary. I think that you're just pointing them out as two obvious ones.
Yeah.
So let's deal with the first one, immortality. The term immortality means never dying. That's not possible. We'd have no idea what the future holds. All we can do is the best with what we've got and to keep on discovering and inventing and exploring. The idea of radical life extension pertains to biology. We're radically extending life that is biological. And how mm-hmm. we do that is why I use the term life expansion. We don't know which mediums or platforms we could exist on with our consciousness or our personal identity, who we are. So I think the term radical life extension is the first step. It's very transhumanist because it means extending as long as we can, as we're, you know, using nanomedicine and regenerative medicine and augmenting ourselves and adding to our bodies and becoming more synergetic with technology. The term immortality also goes back to The Alchemist, and it has a great narrative, great story, but it's not what transhumanism is about. We're mm-hmm. not seeking immortality. We're seeking radical life extension, and then we don't know what after that. But we see the writing on the wall, and one thing's leading to another, so it's wiser to at least know what could occur and to work with it than to hide from it, pretend it doesn't exist like the big monster in the sky. So that's why that's used. The other issue brought up was H+ versus transhumanism. Mm-hmm. Well, that has a little story to it. I'm on the fence with this one. First, I love the term transhumanism. It is exactly what it's saying, but it's not so precise meaning humanism, because humanism does have some particulars that I don't value, although it has many aspects that I do value. So it's not humanism, trans, it means more human transition. Humanism and the Enlightenment offered many insights into human nature and philosophy and culture. And I think postmodernism was right to kind of crack down on that and deconstruct it a bit. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't throw it out. You know, there are some good things. And I think that's where postmodernism makes a mistake. Rather than throwing out, say, oh, humanism is so bad and modernism is so bad, let's take the best and implement it and then create more. And I think that's what transhumanism does. Mm-hmm. Now, the H plus thing, that I didn't like it when it first happened, to be frank. Now it doesn't bother me at all. I guess because I was an early involved in transhumanism, that I thought it was phony. I thought it was dishonest to, like, just, okay, let's hide that word because it's a bad word. And let's put H plus because it doesn't, you know. I thought that at first. I was like, come on, you guys, just, you know, let's do some creative mimetic engineering and work towards making this better understood rather than to put a Band-Aid on it. But now that I look at it from the other side of it, I see that the Band-Aid was, it's okay. H plus is a good name, but it doesn't replace transhumanism. Mm-hmm. H plus organization replaced another organization that had gotten a bit of a questionable reputation, not because of any one person or any one thing. It just it became too politicized. Mm-hmm. So instead of dealing with transhumanism, it was dealing more with some arguments that were political. Although that organization, WTA, did some fabulous work in academics. James Hughes, Nick Bostrom, they did some really great work. So I have to tip my hat to them for what they did. However, the politicizing was not so good because it wasn't always correct. It was a misinterpretation of different people's views. But anyway, I think that the long and the short of is H plus is fine. It's cute. It works. It's H plus, and it looks good. And then if you want more intellectual rigor, then you get into transhumanism. Mm-hmm. So it's like a text. You know, I think if we look at it that way, it's kind of a symbol, which is a quick text, mm-hmm. rather than getting into the more theoretical, philosophical aspects of transhumanism.
It's like a shorthand for transhumanism.
Yeah.
I see. Very, very, very interesting. So, Natasha, you already mentioned, unfortunately, we're kind of approaching towards the end of our interview here. So I'll rush quickly, perhaps, through the last three questions that I have. You already mentioned that in the spring, one of the books is coming out, which is called The Transhumanist Reader. Is there anything else that we should be looking forward to? Any other books?
Yes. Okay. Let's look at this. Let's get back to the issue of the program is, you know, the basics of transhumanism, mm-hmm. and what we can do now to learn about it, mm-hmm. in a world where there is just so much information and misinformation, and even Wikipedia doesn't have it right. I don't know who's on it. Someone is manipulating that. So information gets manipulated, and it's not always correct, and oftentimes it's to promote one idea over another or one person over another. So it's got to shuffle through all this stuff. So, yes, the Transhumanist Reader, it's the full name is The Transhumanist Reader, Classical and Contemporary Essays on the Science, Technology, and Philosophy of the Future Human. Mm-hmm. That, I would say, is the best book to read. I think that Human Enhancement by Bostrom is a good book. I think James Hughes' book is good. But as far as the latest information and what's going on, books are a little bit outdated, aren't they? I mean, it seems like blogs are getting far more attention and Facebook. I think that what we need to do is look for ideas and people doing incredible work. My TV show, H Plus TV, I think will be a great primer for transhumanism. Mm-hmm. I think some of the top sites to go to are Critzwell AI, because it always has the latest information about technology and the issues of transhumanism. I think TerraSim Foundation is another great place to go to find ideas about mind files, mm-hmm. you know, dealing with what we can do right now to copy our personality and back it up, where we can't copy our brain and back it up yet, but at least we can record our behaviors. And your program, I think, is fabulous. These documentary online projects such as yours that deal with people one-on-one, this is so important because then you're getting the latest information. You're getting to know the person a little bit and all of our quirks and stumblings and whatnot as we're trying to answer the question. It's more revealing and it's more lovely and honest, I think. So that's good. I think my dissertation, I have to say, would be a very good reference because it's on life expansion and it's looking at the artistic design base, transhuman, posthuman. So I'm not looking only at the science and technology. I'm looking at the culture. Mm-hmm. And one of the chapters in my dissertation is titled The Contested Culture. And I look at the whole issues of where we are and what conflicts that we can overcome. And I have interviews with some of the leading thinkers in science and technology and bio arts and DIY bio and all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's the methodology is hands-on interview empirical study, which I think is always good for getting in the flow.
Yes, I can attest for that myself a little bit perhaps. So let me ask you, for those of our viewers and listeners who want to find out more about you and your work, for example, the upcoming H+ TV series and stuff like that, what's the best place they can go and look for that?
The best place is probably my website, and I don't have the best website, and I apologize to your viewers. I haven't put up a WordPress yet, and it's still in 20th century format, but I kind of like that, frankly. I'll change it sometime soon, but I think www.natasha.cc is the best place to go. Another great place to go is Humanity Plus's website, which is www.humanityplus.org. H Plus Magazine is a great place to go, mm-hmm. and Facebook. Befriend me on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I usually put something up that's either about my dog or about my work. And I think that we need to get more involved in the arts and gaming and multimedia and the mm-hmm. different events that are going on. There's no event that I can recommend at the moment. There's just conferences. The artistic events, yes, I will give plugs to some artistic events. I recommend Ayers Electronica in Europe as probably the best place to go to learn about the sciences and technologies of narrative. I recommend SIGGRAPH, of course. Your viewers are probably very familiar with SIGGRAPH.
Yeah.
Singularity University has some great projects.
I would say that your name is often being used as a headliner for a number of those conferences. So perhaps you can just give us the short list of some of the ones that you support.
Okay, the upcoming events that I support, there's a conference in Croatia right now on future humans. There's the Mutamorphosis conference that will be in Prague. Mm-hmm. I highly support that. There's, we hope to have Humanity Plus hopes to have an event at Stanford University and San Francisco and Parsons New School of Design coming up, also in Beijing. But as far as the multimedia arts film conferences events, Gogbot in Europe is a great arts festival. And that's really fun. I gave a keynote at it. I think it was last year or the year before. And that's really great. But the only projects in the United States where I'm from that I really support right now or that I do support are at Parsons, the New School for Design, Pratt, University of Advancing Technology is a great location for events. Mm-hmm. In Los Angeles, specifically, a thumbs up to Easy TV. Mm-hmm. It is a great place to connect and learn about ideas. Michael Masucci there runs it, and he's spoken at many transhumanist conferences. He's in the know. LA also, let's see. The 18th Street Art Complex has some great events. And that's pretty much it.
And Natasha, my last question is always the same, actually, on all of my interviews, and that is, What would you like the sort of single most important message that viewers and listeners take away from this interview with you today? What would you like that to be?
Get creative about the future. Be healthy. Learn about what Kevin Kelly calls the quantified self. Pay attention to your body and your mind. And look at transhumanism as an idea that has legs and can offer new ways of looking at where we are and what we could become.
Mm-hmm. Natasha Whittemore, thank you very much for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you. Singularity.